Welcome to Made in the 80s, podcast about the 80s with people who were made in the 80s talking about things from the 80s. I'm Shalia.
This is Tim.
I'm Kendon.
And I am Josh.
We are back together, buddies. Happy to be here. What is going on? What's the news?
What's the news? Okay, the news today is The Dark Knight is returning to theaters for its 10-year anniversary.
It's been 10 years?
Shut your mouth. That's
the thing I said.
Shut the front door.
It's been 10 years, the first thing I said to me. It's been 10 years.
Wow.
10-year anniversary, so it'll be back in theaters.
Can it get an Academy Award?
Yeah, I was going to say, is Heath Ledger going to win again?
No.
Wow. Well, no. You take that news and shove it. No. Then.
Yeah. So, will you go see it in theaters?
Yes. Well, only at IMAX.
IMAX. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think we saw it at Pacific Science Center originally.
Because it had scenes in IMAX.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. The first opening bank sequence is all shot IMAX camera.
And also then when he goes to China.
Yeah, he's in China.
Was there any other major ones?
No.
I don't think so.
That bank robbery, like that whole segment.
So
the whole opening of the movie is just crazy.
They showed that. If you went to go see I Am Legend in IMAX, they showed that opening sequence and did it again with Mission Impossible.
Yep.
Sure. I remember we all saw that again because I
and none of us could understand what Bane was saying.
At the screening, so I was at a screening and they wouldn't show it. So we had a screening for Mission Impossible at the IMAX and they wouldn't show it because it's a different studio. It was Warner Brothers and Skydance, whatever, whoever does Mission Impossible. So they turned the lights on. So the projector is playing the opening sequence to The Dark Knight Rises and we can't see it? And he was like, yeah, pretty much.
Huh.
So anyway, so me and a group of my friends go to see I Am Legend at Pacific Science Center. I'm specifically going to see The Dark Knight footage. And we get there and the projector breaks.
Oh.
So we can't see it.
I'm so sorry.
I left work the next day. They gave us a few fun of us and gave us free tickets, whatever. I left work the next week early to like a 4 o'clock showing. It was me and like four other people in there in the middle of the week.
Nice.
And I remember watching that opening sequence and thinking to myself, I would pay whatever money I have in my pocket right now to watch this movie.
Yeah.
Little did I know.
You wouldn't love it?
Well, I loved it.
The whole movie?
Yeah. It's maybe a half hour too long.
Yeah, they do a lot of weird shit in that movie.
The end of the movie with the fairy stuff, like, we don't need that. Give me the Joker.
Oh, wait.
Are we talking about Bane?
I'm talking about the Dark Knight.
Oh, no, The Dark Knight.
I didn't like the last... That was a little
too much. No, I loved the whole movie.
What do you mean, little did he know?
I thought he was... Sorry, I was talking about The Dark Knight Rises.
I love The Dark Knight Rises.
Dark Knight Rises is at least a half hour too long.
That one is.
Yeah, it's a little long, too.
They could have taken out Marion... Cotier.
Oh, you don't like her death scene?
I didn't like her period in that whole movie.
No, they could have gotten somebody who like seemed like she was actually a ninja princess.
Right. You know, that's kind of what her thing is. And then, her death scene was like totally like... and it's just like...
And, you know, like, I understand the reasons behind it, but the fact that they decided not to reference the Joker in any way, shape, or form...
Yeah.
I feel like removes it from... The Dark Knight too much.
I love that Dark Knight Rises opening sequence on the plane.
That's what I was talking about. Yeah. I don't know that we didn't see the bank robbery section prior to the actual movie coming out. But we did go to Mission Impossible. Yeah. And I remember not understanding what Bane was saying, but not giving... Because this scene was so...
Badass.
Littlefinger shows up.
Yeah.
And then... Was he Littlefinger at that point?
He was.
Because Game of Thrones started in 2011. The Wire,
so we knew him.
We knew him from The Wire.
Yeah, he was Carcetti.
Yeah, he was from The Wire.
He was Carcetti at the time.
Yeah. I was like, damn, like, they should do James Bond. They're doing James Bond better than James Bond. Oh. That was such a... And then when the wings, like, rip off because he had those
two lines I love in that scene where he's like, you know, is your plan to take down this plane? And he's like, yes, with no survivors. And he stands up and, like, rips off the handcuffs and it's just a melee and a shootout.
Yeah.
At the end, when the guy, when they're all leaving the plane, the guy tries to leave. He's like, no, we need to keep one with the wreckage.
Mm-hmm.
And the guy seems excited about dying for the, like...
There it is.
I was like,
you can't do the Bane voice without putting your hand in.
I said, this is insane to me.
Gotta have a mask.
It was such an insane sequence, and it was no Batman.
I feel like that movie did not live up to that opening, unfortunately.
I love the movie.
It was a good movie. I'm gonna.
It was a good movie. No, it's definitely a good movie. But I haven't watched it. I don't think I've watched it since like 2012.
I love Bane's speech in front of the Blackgate Prison.
I loved his speech.
He's right
in the stadium as well.
Yeah, he's so polite. Like he says, that kid has a nice voice. Like right before he blows up the stadium.
Yeah,
and then there's that scene when they get to the stock exchange and he says thank you for the woman for holding his helmet. Yeah. So he does these weird little things where he's clearly robbing people and terrorizing them and they've murdered somebody. And he's just like, thank you.
Well, then he killed the lady.
You're welcome.
Yeah. I think he lives up to, like, as a follow-up to Heath Ledger's Joker. Like, yeah. I know that might be sort of blasphemous, but that's part of what the problem with the Marion Cotillard character is that I think in the end, her being the one that's actually in charge.
Yeah, she's the one pulling strings. Seems weird.
Like, Bane was a really good choice because he's smart. They like he's very different than the comic books, except for that he's still they still got the part where he's really smart and also a physical challenge to Batman. Yeah.
When they that scene where Catwoman leads him down to the tunnels and you realize they're gonna fight, I'm like, they're not gonna break his back this early, right? Yes, in my head, I'm like, there's no way this happens this early in the movie. And he destroys him.
Scene with he turns off the light, the dripping water, yeah. And he just pounds his head.
Because there's no other noise. It's not scored. It's just this guy getting the crap kicked out of him for 90 seconds straight.
I'm going to watch that after we're done here.
That's an intense scene. I remember watching. It's like, oh my God. They're beating the shit out of Batman right now.
And he cracks the helmet.
Yeah. And he just like
throws it.
Like Batman is just...
Man, Ben...
Little stuff like... He says, oh, I want you to see this. He blows it up and says, this is what we're doing. And... Even when he like... has him in the prison, when he gets up, he like puts all his full weight on him. Because he's like kneeling next to him talking, and he just like puts his weight on him. He knows he has a hurt back.
But still the best is how menacingly he could put his hand upside down with the palm up on the guy's shoulder.
Yeah.
Just very lightly. Do you feel in control?
Yeah.
Okay, but what about The Dark Knight? Since that's what the news is.
Oh, yeah. The Dark Knight's
Are we excited
amazing.
About that? Because I was like, I think that was amazing.
A question, was the Batpod scene in IMAX as well?
What Batpod scene?
The motorcycle chase.
Yes.
He's going after the semi.
That's in IMAX too?
Oh, that sound design, that scene is so great. I love the sound. It's a weird thing. Like, I love listening to the truck, when it flips,
I can't remember.
The cable going around, the all the sound is so great in that scene.
I might have actually cheered when the bike goes up the wall, turns around, and lands the other direction. I was like, what the fuck are we doing here? And like the wheel just busting through the glass in the mall. Yeah. That movie is amazing.
Yeah. I can listen to that scene and it's fantastic.
Yeah.
But what about the flipping of the semi truck? That would not happen in real life.
No. I don't know the physics behind that.
No, he'd probably break in half.
The trailer would
rip off the wheels. Yeah, I don't know. Yeah. But it was fun.
It looked so good.
It did. It looked really cool, but
suspension of disbelief, Josh.
Yeah, I know. For sure. I think that's the only...
And then, all of it, like... Oh, I mean, we're literally looking at the... Josh got me this awesome picture of the Joker standing in front of Batman on the Batpod. He's like, come on, hit me. And then he doesn't. And then he dances over to him.
Yes.
Yeah. And like the guy gets electrocuted and he's joking around with him. And then Commissioner Gordon has the shotgun up against him. Mm-hmm. That entire scene, it's... best picture.
And then the poor, Batman has to choose. He knew he'd choose that one.
Oh, that's evil. I forgot about that.
Yeah. That's like the most evil thing he does.
I didn't get it first time. Evil. I didn't realize that
he knows he's gonna choose her. Yeah, he knew it. So he gives him the wrong address.
Yeah, that's so good.
That's so evil.
One of the greatest scenes in movie history is that interrogation scene too.
Yeah. Yeah, and that was like they actually hit each other, and I think Heath Ledger told Christian Bale to actually hit him. Make this real. And so
that explains it, because the way he bangs his head on the table at the beginning looks so brutal.
I think when he starts it off, he hits his head, right? And then he just slam dunks his hand.
Yeah.
Just crushes his hand.
But such a great line. Never start with the head.
Yeah. they get all fuzzy.
All they found in his pockets were his knives and
lint. Knives and lint.
A lot of knives, though.
A lot of knives.
Yeah.
Great movie.
There's that really creepy scene though when they're in the DA's office and that guy gets hung by outside the building.
Oh, yeah.
I jumped.
And they leave that tape.
Yeah.
That tape is terrifying.
That was directed by me.
That is so terrifying.
That was directed by Heath Ledger.
Was it?
That scene. Yeah, that scene.
Oh, man.
That was terrifying. I was like, geez, this isn't a Batman movie?
You want to see a magic trick?
Yeah, in the opening, in the opening when Batman shows up and with Scarecrow there, and he's like, you're not Batman. Then he shows up, oh, that's Batman.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's cool stuff.
I'm not wearing hockey pads.
Yeah. There are so... My mind is kind of exploding because I have some, like, segues into what we're talking about today. But do we have any other news that we wanted to mention first?
No, I don't know.
Star Wars got pulled from China.
For what?
It was so...
It wasn't doing
well. It was doing so horribly at the box office.
Well, it's been out forever.
Not in China.
No, not in China.
It's only been out there for like 2 weeks in China.
Oh.
It made like $6 million or something stupid.
Weird.
I don't know.
Well, it's not November, so. It's but. Not weird because they don't have the same history with Star Wars.
But the last one,
Force Awakens.
Rogue One.
Force Awakens and Rogue One did really well over there.
But do you think about it? They had Donnie Yen and another.
Yeah.
That main is true. Chinese they had two actor. Chinese actors in it.
Yeah. But if you think about it, like in 1977, China was not a rich country. I don't think any of the three Star Wars movies that we grew up with were released in China.
Well, I mean, shit, it's only been, what, the last 15 years probably when China's become a huge market for movies?
Yeah.
So.
Surprising, though, that it's not, I mean, it's doing that bad.
Yeah, I think of all the movies that have gone on over there, this has been the poorest. I can't remember what the other movies were, but they're like...
Well, I mean, like, the Marvel movies have done well.
Yeah, they all
but, do. Like, the problem with Star Wars is that you can't, like, pander to the audience by putting a scene in China. Like, they've done with, like, the Transformers movie.
Yeah, that's true.
Hey, we're in China for no reason.
Yeah, and I'm drinking... He was drinking some... There was, like, product placement for Chinese, like, drink.
Yeah.
Remember?
Jesus Christ.
And then Age of Ultron there in China again.
I support that.
Yeah, I mean, it makes sense. Like, why would these things happen only in the U.S. anyways? But it's also so
blatant. But to cater to a specific... Just to get movie tickets.
Yeah.
Makes it a little...
Well, at the same time, Americans aren't going as often.
No, most movies make all their money internationally.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So...
So where is that putting Last Jedi, then?
It's still the number one movie in the world.
Okay.
Didn't, like, World of Warcraft get saved by...
A lot of movies get saved by China.
Yeah. China was, I think, its biggest audience.
Yeah, so, that makes sense.
Yeah, I think Last Jedi is in the top 10 for all time.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Despite
everybody bitching about it.
Made some dough.
Or half the people on the internet.
Ryan Johnson has come out lately and, like, defended a lot of major issues that people have... come up with. And,
really?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, it's weird.
I appreciate that.
Because it was just, we didn't do things the way that we did in other movies. Big deal. Like, it was interesting to me. I liked the movie.
Yeah.
And they asked him why he didn't put the Knights of Ren in there. He's like, 'cause I would have killed them. So I didn't want to put them in my movie.
Yeah.
That would have been great.
Yeah, save them.
Yeah,
save
but him. It would have been like Snoke, you know? You build them up and then you kill them. You build up the Knights of Ren and then you kill them without even giving them.
We might enjoy seeing
maybe they'll be in the next
that's
movie.
That's true.
I don't know. It seems like as a person who's been a fan of Star Wars stuff outside of just the movies, you always have some bad guys that are interested and then get killed.
That random stormtrooper?
Yeah.
God bless America.
He need better aim.
I kind of want to see Thrawn on the big screen.
Who?
Oh, right, Admiral Thrawn. He's on Rebels now, I hear? He's an Imperial officer who's got blue skin. He's Chiss? Is that what
they're
called?
Chiss, yeah. He was, in the books. I don't know if it's in the movies, but in the books, the Empire hates aliens. So
they're very xenophobic.
They're very xenophobic. And so he was like this master.
What?
Yeah.
Sorry. That's interesting.
Have you ever seen white males?
They're like the Nazis.
Never. There's never one who's not like a white
male. Wow. I did not know that.
Yeah, the First Order is a little bit different.
But
they're all women, just straight up still human.
Well, and whatever Snoke human. Is. Snoke's not human, right?
No.
I don't know.
No.
He's a Ewok human hybrid from.
Oh, that's why he's so tall?
Oh, Yub Yub.
Is that Ewok?
That is his name. Snoke Yub Yub Magoo or something.
So
I'm shaking my head.
So there's a really famous trilogy called Heir to the Empire. It was basically growing up what we all thought happened after the Return of the Jedi, because we never knew that there were going to ever be any more movies. And so it follows, what, like a decade or so after the events of Return of the Jedi, and the remnants of the Empire being led by Grand Admiral Thrawn, who was an admiral, or Grand Admiral, who was, he was like on a mission in the Outer Rim or whatever.
Yeah, he was basically banished out there. They wanted him because he was so good or something.
He's so good that the point is that he's an alien, but he's so good that he's at the top of the, he's basically at the top of the military order. And so he's the one who's running the Empire, or what's left of the Empire now.
Yeah, and he's a master
strategist, right?
Strategist, yeah. He studies their art, I believe it was. Mm-hmm. Something crazy.
So that was Nerd Hour.
Boom!
I hope you guys enjoyed that. Okay, 2018. What are we going to talk about today? Lethal Weapon! And here's why it's so exciting. Okay, there's two ways. I said my head was exploding. It's not exploding, but... There's
Liar.
Two ways, like what we were talking about in our news, or what news, like, directly relates to Lethal Weapon. First, Shane Black is responsible for Lethal Weapon, and he's going to do Predator, which is exciting, right?
Well, he was in the original Predator.
He was in the movie, too, yeah.
He's the guy with the glasses.
Yeah. Oh, is he really?
He also wrote
Iron Man 3,
yeah.
Yeah, so that's exciting. Interesting timing for us.
Yes. Okay.
Yeah, and then the other thing is we were watching, this was Kendon's, a spoiler alert, this is Kendon's first time watching Lethal Weapon, and seeing Mel Gibson, what did you say, Kendon, about Heath Ledger and how he must have learned a lot from Mel Gibson?
I saw so much like of the Joker's, of Heath Ledger's Joker in Mel Gibson's performance.
And we were wondering, like, they spent a lot of time together in The Patriot and maybe some other, you know.
Yeah.
So, Patriot.
Love The Patriot. So wondering if Heath Ledger did learn some tricks, or if Mel Gibson was kind of a mentor.
And Mel Gibson, he did have a long stint in Australia.
They're both Australian.
I don't think Mel Gibson is Australian.
He is Australian. Remember, Matt movies. He's an Australian actor.
I don't know.
Mel Gibson also leaves very fascinating voicemails, if you guys didn't know.
I heard that.
Especially when he's drunk.
Yeah, really.
Voicemails. I also am known for leaving drunk messages.
What are your drunk messages?
Not to that level.
But he has
look at my cat.
You can kind of catch a bit of accent.
He has a bit of Australian accent in this one.
Yeah.
So that's something that he's, you can kind of.
I was shocked with how young he was.
Yes.
And how good-looking.
Strapping young man.
At some point, there's a part where he's like, shoot me! Shoot me! That sounded Joker-ish to me.
Well, he does
the I'm hungry part, where he's just about to shoot himself.
Yeah.
And he puts the finger in, and he's like, I'm hungry now.
He's basically being psychotic.
And
in those points, you were seeing the Joker.
In the way he can just flip things, like change the mode he's in.
He was very intense.
He goes from very intense to something else.
My theory is that Mel Gibson really is Riggs in real life. That's him.
Sure.
A Lethal Weapon?
No, he's Riggs. He's not really acting too much. He's being himself.
Yeah.
Crazy, out of control.
Huh. Interesting.
He's Riggs.
Sure. Although Riggs is so lovable.
Yeah.
Mm, no, not so much.
I don't know. Maybe as a crazy uncle.
Yeah. I wouldn't trust him to watch my cat. But I would trust him if I was like...
He'd forget.
No, if I needed someone to like
be fun at a kid's birthday party for like a short amount of time.
No.
Like the drunk uncle?
I don't know.
I probably wouldn't bring him around the kids, but I would trust him with the animals.
He's around. Murtaugh's kids. Alright, so what's this movie? Okay,
statutories.
Yeah.
Lethal Weapon, what's it about?
Leave him alone.
What is Lethal Weapon about?
Lethal Weapon, 1987. Who wants to give us a description? Who's the plot?
Okay.
Let's go for it.
Well, it starts with a young woman's murder. Well, suicide.
I have a question about that. We can wait.
I do too, actually.
Okay. It starts with cocaine.
A lady died.
No, it wasn't cocaine.
It wasn't cocaine.
Heroin.
Why did she kill herself? I didn't even catch why she actually did.
We'll get there.
We got to talk about that later.
So it starts with a woman jumping out of a window of an apartment or hotel, whatever. Yeah. Apartment. And then Murtaugh gets the case, realizes Murtaugh gets the case, realizes it's a friend of his. Riggs show it ends up getting partnered with Riggs, and people think Riggs is pretending to be crazy so he can get some sort of insurance.
Pension money.
So he gets paired up with him. He doesn't want a partner. And then they realize as they investigate this murder of this, the death of this young woman, it's this whole rabbit hole of this conspiracy thing that's happening.
It's a pretty cool idea.
It's an idea. It's a pretty cool idea.
I think it's like it's based in truth. And the idea being that drugs are being brought in by people in the military.
But something that did happen, though.
Forces. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. And I think it might still happen with, like, opium. Like, I'm not trying to slander anybody, but we are in Afghanistan, and we are also have a lot of heroin problem.
Because that's what happened in with, you know, we've all seen the movie. But they were bringing in drugs through caskets, because no one's going to check a casket of a dead soldier. It's disrespectful. So you put some heroin in there.
Yeah.
To get back overseas. You know, no one's going to check it. You get to fly in the customs. You get to bring it in. You take out the heroin. Put the body where it needs to be. And you've got the dope in. It makes sense. So anyway, yeah. So that's the movie. It ends up, their investigation ends up unraveling a whole conspiracy about drugs getting into this country.
Yeah.
Bam. And it's a buddy cop. It's a
buddy cop film.
It's a buddy cop film.
Lots of shooting. Action. Lots of fighting. Tons of action.
Comedy.
It's got to be one of the early versions of a buddy cop film, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'd say so.
Murtaugh has a lot. I like that he has his own music, kind of. They play that funny, like, he's his own little funny, zippy music whenever he's on screen. It's really great.
I did not notice that.
Yeah, every time he's on there, it's so funny.
I really like the Riggs character, like, how they established, like, he was Special Forces.
Yeah.
And, like,
it's a great shot.
A great shot. And, like, that comes in later, especially in the smoke grenade and just picking off. I think Josh was mentioning this, but this is basically like a Grand Theft Auto mission. A couple of Grand Theft Auto missions.
Yeah, it's like a video game.
Yeah.
What's the first mission?
Oh, you just had to start there. I don't know. I would say, I think what I really thought about it is towards the end. You know, they're chasing after him. What was it? They're running out of the room, out of the building. He's running down the street, chasing after Gary Busey.
Yeah.
Gary Busey gets in a car. Mel Gibson's just running, and then he shoots at the car. The car crashes. Gary Busey gets out. Mel Gibson's still chasing after him, and then they're shooting at each other, but no one's getting hit.
Yeah.
You know, or, you know, it's just like, video game.
I feel like a mission would start kind of like when he's talking to his army buddy. And he gets shot through the window.
Yeah.
And then Riggs is trying to shoot at the helicopter. Except for in a video game, you would have hopped into another helicopter right. And followed him. And then also, when they were being tortured.
But he was shooting him at a funeral, though, right? Was there what was happening at the house?
Some kind of wake, because the daughter had been killed.
This guy got murdered in his daughter's wake.
Yeah, it was the chick that jumped off the building.
Everyone's there in black.
And he had another daughter.
And he freaking shoots him.
But, after they get tortured and they escape, and they escape out into a club, that gave me John Wick vibes.
It was, yeah.
Like, the way he, like, got the guy really close to him and shot him, like, really close up and all of that.
Yeah, you were like, who is that? And we were like, he recognized him. He knew exactly who he was killing.
Yeah. So
It holds up.
It's like, jumping ahead, yes, it was influential.
All right. Do we make it through the plot?
That's kind of the plot, without spoiling
everything that happens. Yeah, if we don't go plot... point to pop. Oh, also the part where they're with the guy at the pool.
Yes, that gave me nightmares as a kid, because that's like he falls
into the pool and like it gets wrapped
up in plastic and can't get out and just drowns.
That is awful.
And he was shot too. I mean, shooting didn't
happen. Yeah, he did get shot. Yeah,
but he was a bad guy, so it's okay, right?
Yeah, and one of the things, one of the tropes that this movie does that movies did afterwards, where these officers stumble into a situation that they're not aware of, and it's just complete danger. So when they show up at the house, they get shot at.
Mm-hmm.
When they're on the street after the shooting at the wake, they get shot at again, just on the street hanging out. These guys just roll up and shoot at them.
You know, one cool aspect of this is like the guns, like the different. Riggs is probably using, or not Riggs, Murtaugh's probably using like a .38, right?
Yeah.
He's using a revolver, and Riggs kind of refers to that as an old-timer's gun, and he's using a semi-auto 9mm. And I remember that there's a, like a famous incident of like some bank robbers or something, right? Do you know about this one?
In L.A.?
It was in L.A. and they had like body armor and assault rifles and the police.
There's video of this on YouTube.
And this was back when the police were still using like 38 revolvers and stuff. And they were just so outgunned. And that's when they moved over. But I thought it was 40 calibers that they move over to. Like 40 cal semi-automatics. Because 9mm compared, like, is still not, doesn't have enough stopping power compared. But I'm not sure.
I think they went to 45s.
To 45s? Yeah, I think it was 40 cals. But anyways.
Whatever.
It was just, it was interesting because he's like the young guy and he's got the new semi-auto and he's got all, what do they call him? Oh, they call him a lethal weapon because he's got, Taekwondo, what is it?
Like, Jiu-Jitsu.
Jiu-Jitsu.
Yeah.
Just the way that they contrast the two characters, I really like.
Yeah, especially the opening. So you open up with Murtaugh and his family and his daughters and his wife and they're...
Oh, you've got a little gray in your beard.
Yeah, they come down for breakfast and their friends are there and he's eating bacon and then they cut to Riggs. He's like smoking in his bed. He's drinking a beer in the morning. He's by himself living in like a trailer on the beach. Like, it's two completely different lives that they're living.
So Murtaugh is played by... Danny Glover. No relation to
Donald Glover.
Unfortunately.
Hashtag Miles Morales. Right.
Hashtag Lando Calrissian, I guess, now, too.
Yeah.
Okay, so yeah, we got Danny Glover, Mel Gibson.
He's playing Riggs.
Mm-hmm.
And a bunch of other random people I don't remember.
Well,
Gary Busey.
Gary Busey.
Mr. Joshua.
Mr. Joshua, what were you doing in that movie?
Getting his arm.
Busey's really good in this movie.
Thing.
Didn't know
he is.
Yeah, he's your typical 80s bad guy, and he's like the whole arm burning scene.
Yeah.
Where he's just
that's
like,
freaky.
Yeah, I don't know. That guy.
Mm.
He's just a creeper.
Also, very 80s, we had opening scene. Tim, you mentioned it. Hookers and Blow.
Hookers and Blow.
Was
opening
she a hooker?
Scene. She was a hooker.
She was a hooker.
No.
Cause
but it wasn't Blow.
No, it wasn't.
She was snorting it, though.
She was a hooker because a girl, another working girl, comes down before Murtaugh finds out
was this
who
also
she is. Another working girl comes and says.
Did they have the end South African apartheid on sticker? Was this the one I caught that in? It's also very 80s.
Well, I did catch the gigantic cell phone he was carrying around.
And did you see that he had a
the case,
big
the battery?
Old battery thing with it? Like, Jesus Christ. He's
also,
got a big old briefcase.
A ton of saxophone music.
I hated that. I forgot why I hate saxophones. Well, I think this movie is the reason I hate saxophones.
Isn't that kind of like the noir crime?
Yes. For the 80s
actually, hop thing? Yeah.
Can't stand
they
it.
Do that same thing in
Blade Runner. Yeah.
But is it a sax or is it something else?
Probably synthesizer.
Yeah, I'm sure they synthesize
it. You're right. It does have that noir.
But that was like kind of the Murtaugh.
Yeah.
You know, kind of old school and then, you know.
And happy. Happy with his life, right?
Yeah.
You know, he's an old school cop.
Older cop.
And, you know, he's got his family, he's got his kids and all that fun stuff. And then you got Riggs, who's really sad.
Riggs
his
loose,
wife died.
Riggs is sad.
And he blames himself for his wife being dead.
And that's why he's psychotic.
He's good at killing people, but he doesn't get to do that anymore.
He carries a bullet around with him that's the one he wants to shoot himself with.
Which is...
This scene where he puts a gun in his
Logan.
Yeah.
But he doesn't need like a special bullet.
Logan, he has a bullet.
Oh, the adamantium bullet.
Yeah, adamantium bullet. Huh.
So, but Riggs gets to be funny, right?
There's another movie that has...
Just say that's interesting, guys.
Yeah, but Riggs gets to be funny. Things, so, Kevin. Riggs got the thing where he's trying to buy... Also, this is a Christmas movie.
Riggs gets going...
He's at the Christmas tree place, and he's trying to buy cocaine.
Drugs. Yeah.
And he says 100. They think 100,000. He starts counting out $100, and these guys get so mad.
So funny.
It's a great scene.
Yes.
And you just start shooting everyone.
Just shooting everyone. And then there's the other scene where the guy jumps off is going to commit suicide. He jumps off with him.
Yes, that was so great too.
Yeah.
He handcuffs himself to the guy and then jumps off the building.
Did anybody catch what they said on the radio when Murtaugh was pulling up to the suicide scene?
Mm-hmm.
The girls? No. The radio was saying that they had a 5-foot, 350-pound woman who was drunk, naked, and singing.
What?
Yeah, it was on the radio.
The movie is great.
It really is.
There's a lot of good stuff. And after we're not even getting into all the action, the chase, like you said, Gary Busey's character. The ending where they sort of let them fight.
Yeah.
It reminded me of the end of Friday.
Actually, yeah.
I was like, this reminds me of Friday.
It would have been great if he had thrown a brick at him.
He's like, let me get him, Riggs. And Riggs is like, no, I got him. Like, he's, Murtaugh's like, I'll shoot him.
I feel like I knew that he was going to be arrested, yet while I was watching the fight, I wasn't sure that he was going to win the fight.
Yeah, no.
It wasn't just like he was obviously beating him.
Mm-hmm.
I liked that.
It was a pretty even fight.
It was a good fight. Well, I mean, they've both been
through a lot, but he throws him a weapon. What does he throw him?
A stick or something.
A baton.
A baton, because he's got something. And so he starts using the baton.
Yeah.
And then they both end up shooting him with that cool slow motion.
That's good.
Yeah. And there's rain. Just one's over the other. Yeah. Just they're
fully
partner mode right now, you know?
That's kind of, though, kind of a callback to earlier with the pool guy, because he does the same shit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because he says he shoots people in the leg and stuff.
Yeah.
And he brings it up later on. You're going to shoot him in the leg? Like, what are you going to do? Another funny scene is when they're at the shooting range.
Yeah.
And they're both shooting, and he finally sees Rick's target, and it's a smiley face.
That was really good.
Well, yeah, Murtaugh's all like, yeah, look at this. And he, sends the target out and holsters his gun and just draws and just shoots him dead center in the head. And then Murtaugh's like, oh, yeah, look at this. And Riggs sends it all the way back, pulls out his Beretta, and just pop, 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 pop.
But Murtaugh, that comes back later because he gets the driver of the car.
He gets his big scene in the alleyway and he shoots the driver.
Exactly. Although he maybe should have done that earlier because that car causes a lot of damage.
It doesn't matter. It's the 80s.
Yeah, right. It does.
That's how it works.
But one of the cool scenes I forgot was the desert scene where they're trying to get his daughter back.
That scene is amazing.
That's a Grand Theft Auto mission right there.
I really like the way that they're driving the car. He jumps out, and the way he runs with the sniper rifle, very professionally. He knows what he's doing. He's like...
Well, so Riggs was a sniper in Vietnam.
Yep.
There's a lot of Vietnam throwback in this movie.
Yeah.
So that's a question I have for you guys at some point.
What about it?
I'm going to talk about
What's
it now.
The question?
Well, so that's something I was wondering about. This is the drugs and him, right? This is like the blowback from Vietnam. And did we have a lot of those kind of movies in the 80s? Or just that
Rambo,
was that happening,
the Rambo
right?
Movies.
Rambo, yeah, exactly.
Death Wish.
Like the Vietnam's over and now here's what we're dealing with.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, and I remember one of the great
They're all action movies, though.
From Die Hard. When they're in the helicopter, the two federal agents, he's like, it's just like Saigon or something like that. And he was like, I was in middle school.
Who's also in this movie.
Yeah.
Yeah, he is. He's one of the detectives.
Yeah.
Agent Johnson.
But yeah, there were a lot of that. But there were mostly action movies that weren't taken seriously until probably Born on the 4th of July or Forrest Gump.
But yeah, I think that nowadays, we have movies where the people were in Afghanistan or Iraq. Well, we still have people in Afghanistan.
Den of Thieves, the group. Yeah, they're all, we're buddies over in Afghanistan.
Yeah.
And they come back over and decide to rob banks. But that gives them the special skill they need in case it's a shootout or they makes them tough. They can train and they can deal with high stress. So yeah, you get that a lot now in these movies where that's the history, or because it speaks to a bond these men had. And they've been in something together.
Well, it also kind of is not only were we in the military and we got training, but also we have experience in quote unquote a real situation. It's not like we have military training in peacetime, but we have we were in battle, battle forged sort of skills or brotherhood or whatever.
Yeah,
so Riggs was in Vietnam. He was a sniper, and then the bad guys. So
we're also in Vietnam.
They're like a shadow company or something, weren't they? They're a shadow special forces group.
Some of them.
Gary Busey was Gary Busey. I know the old dude that was his boss. He was
somebody was.
He managed.
Because Riggs, doesn't he refer to them just as a bunch of pussies or something?
Yeah.
He's like, I ran into a bunch of pussies like you in Saigon or something.
Yeah. So I don't know if anybody has been. We definitely watched the Vietnam. Recently, there was the whole Ken Burns Vietnam series. And in case you haven't, what happened in Vietnam is that we kind of covertly expanded the war into Cambodia and Laos. So this shadow group were people who were doing operations in, I think, Cambodia, where we weren't officially supposed to be. That's why they were a shadow group.
That's right.
And so then, because of that, it makes it easier for them to set up this other shadow thing.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
They're already in there doing things they're not supposed to be doing, so the idea that they're also using this as a cover to smuggle drugs out is, it makes it easier for them.
And they're all connected, like, through this, but, like, one of them didn't serve with them. He was actually, was with Murtaugh in Vietnam, but he had some kind of connection with them, and he's the dad of the girl who dies in the very beginning. So, question, as soon as Tim started explaining it, we all kind of jumped at it. So, movie opens. Mm-hmm. We've got saxophone music, I'm sure.
Nudity!
Nudity.
Yeah, I remember as a kid.
Tasteful.
Some snorting powder.
She snorts some powder.
And then she jumps off the building. Mm-hmm. So, it becomes necessary for us, because I get this feeling like we come into this supposed to follow Murtaugh.
Right.
And then we are investigating this crime with him, with his new partner. Like, he mm-hmm. seems like the character that we're supposed to be, like, shadowing. Mm-hmm. And so it becomes his, because they decide it's a homicide, mm-hmm. which is very confusing. Well, he gets involved because it's his friend's daughter, so yeah. he knows about it. But then it turns out she didn't just jump. She did jump, but it was a murder. And I was very confused.
Yeah, I don't know
how. How is that a murder?
So the drugs were, there was a poison or something. There was tampering with the drugs.
Yeah. And they said, if she hadn't jumped, she was going to die. Yeah. But she didn't. She jumped. So I don't understand how, she didn't die from poisoning.
But she was poisoned. So someone was trying to murder her.
Yeah, she was attempted murder.
And they're saying the poison may have led to her jumping instead of dying.
Maybe they determined she had died from the poison before she hit the car at the
ground. Oh, that makes more sense.
Bam! I don't know. Gary Busey was awesome, though. Well,
I think they're investigating it as a murder.
Yeah.
Whether or not they know that it was a murder.
There was an investigation because she killed herself, and then they determined that she had poison in her.
Yeah.
And so there's probably somebody else around.
The plot.
That's enough to make it.
Yeah. It's like where the drugs come from, and yada yada yada. So then they go down the rabbit hole. Yeah.
And it's good that Riggs is. The one who then becomes Murtaugh's partner, because he's coming off of Drug Squad, right? Like, mm-hmm. they're like, he's had too much. Yeah. They're the whole department's looking at him. The psych person is like, he should not be working. And so they take him from drugs to homicide. And I was wondering...
You know, for a break.
Yeah, for a break.
Right.
But so LA. That was my next question is, what was the status in 1987 around that time of, like, the war on drugs?
Oh, it was bad.
And, like, what they were up to.
Yeah.
We're talking about the height of crack cocaine.
Yeah.
It was bad. The quote-unquote war on drugs. But that was happening.
But was that an intense...
Why are there quotes involved in that?
There was no war on drugs. There was never a war on drugs.
What was the war on?
You're right. It's a war on drug users.
Yes. And war on people selling drugs. Never a war on actual drugs. They were using the drugs to fund the Contras.
Yeah.
Similar to what we're seeing in this movie, right? Mm-hmm. We're getting these drugs. Mm-hmm. That's the other piece that's not really in the movie, is they're getting these drugs... Because they're funding a covert operation that it shouldn't be involved in, which is exactly
happened. Are they using this to fund the covert stuff in, like, Cambodia?
Yeah, because the government's not going to pay for that because it's covert.
Oh, no, I didn't realize. I thought they were just enriching themselves.
No. It's probably that, too, I'm sure.
Yeah, but I didn't realize that extra piece is in the mix. It makes it even more sinister.
Not in the movie, but that's what happened in real life.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I mean? That's what I imagine.
Because basically, Congress would not, if you were not at war or were doing these shadow operations, Congress can't be out here appropriating money.
No.
So instead, like, the Iran-Contra thing was basically selling weapons to Iran under the table, using that money mm-hmm. to fund the Contras in Nicaragua.
Yes.
So it's just about these underhanded ways to pay for military action that... We should be doing.
The state's not really sanctioning. We shouldn't be involved in it.
Right.
And then there's that time where they found all of Pablo Escobar's money, and we don't know what happened to it. Just magically disappeared. The $250 million just.
And like the man said, how is all these drugs getting into the hood, into the ghettos? Because we don't have passports.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. So that's what was really happening. So there was no real war on drugs. It was just a thing that they. And they scared people, right? Because, you know, D.C. was a war zone. L.A. was a war zone. And so you scare communities into saying, it's a war on drugs. There was a D.A.R.E. program.
They're talking about bringing back the D.A.R.E. program?
Because of heroin. But it's all these things to cover up the fact that, like, why is this happening? And this isn't a conspiracy. Like, it sounds conspiracy-ish, but well documented. It's what happened, and they have to say shit rolls downhill, and the people downhill in these marginalized communities, no one really cared about. So you can point to them and say, well, black people and Mexicans mm-hmm. are inherently violent. This is why these things are happening. Not that, like, we're pumping money and drugs in communities with no infrastructure. It's not, when I talk to people who, like my dad's age, who were alive during that time, like my dad talks about East Oakland, but it's not an East Oakland I recognize. It's a middle class, upper middle class black neighborhood with people. Mm-hmm. My dad calls the crack bomb. So once the crack bomb went off, it wasn't, we saw them as crackheads, but at the time it was like teachers and like parents and, you know, like Pretty Woman, it's street workers, right? Mm-hmm. But no one really knew what it was. So people were freebasing because heroin was a drug not to do. Mm-hmm. So people start freebasing crack cocaine and it's, you know, postmen and like people who own businesses and their lives are completely ruined.
So like my dad is from Albany, Georgia, mm-hmm. right? And the same thing happened there when crack came through. It was either one of the years in the early 90s or late 80s where it was like the murder capital of the country.
Albany, Georgia. That kind of stuff was happening often.
At least Wikipedia says so.
Yeah.
But
those kind of things happened.
Yeah. Because and it's not what he remembers from growing up. It's just the drugs came through and all of a sudden this happens. Right. And there's a documentary out there I haven't seen yet, but it's been recommended to me. It's called Kill the Messenger.
It's not a documentary, it's a movie.
It's a movie?
And it's really good.
But it's based on a true
It's person. Based on Gary Webb and
oh, you know about it then, yeah, you can
say and everything and sort of his how he stumbles upon a story randomly covering like a court case mm-hmm. for like some San Francisco Gazette paper or something crazy. He like stumbles upon like this weird thing and then goes down this rabbit hole and finds out the CIA is funding all of this.
Yeah.
And they ruined this man's life.
They killed him.
He died of suicide. 2 shots to the head is the official story.
2 shots to the head.
That is the official story.
How many people?
That is the official story.
Okay.
That's what they said. But
when Double tap.
But they ruined his life. They made him out to be a crazy person. And then the movie at the end gets a title card that says like, the CIA pretty much admitted all this was true, but this was right as Clinton was having his scandal with Monica Lewinsky, and people just didn't care. That wasn't the news. The news was Clinton. Oh, wow. No one cared that CIA was like, yeah, that guy, he's kind of right about everything.
Jeez. We did that. My bad.
Yeah. But that's what...
But so one thing
that's what's so frustrating when I hear these people, when I watch the news, and I hear people talk about why don't people in these communities do better? And it like...
Because there's been an just active...
In my lifetime, this thing happened. In my lifetime. That we've seen, and there's no help for it. And on top of that, you put people in prison, and you made money off of that. They were making money every angle they could have. Locking people up for prison, money on the drugs, money on selling fear to other people. They're like, these things are going to happen in the neighborhood, so buy guns, buy security, move to the suburbs, get away from this. It was like, it was a cash cow for everyone but the people being suppressed by it.
So a really important thing for, like, within... You know, the 80s being the end of the Soviet Union, right? 1989 was roughly the end of Soviet Union, 1989, 1990. You gotta think, like, a whole lot of this stuff was fueled by, like, the most important thing to the U.S. government was the struggle against communism, right? Yes. And so, you know, the blighting of these neighborhoods and selling of the drugs, like, it's okay if it's funding anti-communist things, mm-hmm. all around the world, because that was the real main point, you know. So
the cost was okay.
The cost was okay because we can't have, you know, this awful ideology take hold.
But think about you. Listen, we were talking about the last podcast on the left, and they often talk about the least dead, right?
Exactly.
But those are the people in these communities when these things happen. Mm-hmm. We're the least dead, so people don't care about what happens to you. They don't care about what's happening in Chicago.
Well, this is exactly why
they don't care. They don't really
drugs,
care.
Drugs is an important health issue now because of who's dying from heroin.
Well, so but I saw an article recently. So the opioids and heroin, like, that's a thing right now, right? We're in a crisis, an opioid crisis. But I saw an article recently that said that as much as there is this uptick in heroin overdoses or opioid overdoses, black people are dying of cocaine. mm-hmm. at least, do you remember, I think I sent it to you guys, like, the number is even higher of cocaine problems right now, but I'm not hearing anything about that. I'm only hearing about opioids.
Yeah, I think, I mean,
it relates.
We're hearing a lot about heroin now, and the crazy thing is, like, The Wire, which all of us have watched, right?
Yeah.
That was all about heroin. Like, you would, yep. like, think it was about, like, it would have been about crack or cocaine or something, but it was all about heroin, but yet heroin was not big in the news when that was on the air.
My dad I love talking to my dad, but he was telling me, you know, he was in New York during the 60s, and he talked about seeing Malcolm X line up to preach on the street corner, and the police would be there busting up people, harassing people. Six blocks away, somebody selling heroin.
Wow.
Not known heroin spot, no one around. Just people dealing dope. People's like, that was the 60s. Yeah. So when I watched that movie and it talked about how much money what is that movie with Denzel Washington where he plays that big drug dealer in New York, The True Story.
American Gangster?
Yeah. So
Frank Lucas.
Yeah, so when I asked my dad about Frank Lucas and how he can make so much money, he was like, think about it. You're a soldier. You go over there, you fight the war. You're using drugs. You come back. You've got all this money that you haven't been spending. You're going to spend it on drugs.
Because you're messed up.
Yeah. Not about them being messed up, but like the idea that like I go over there, I get a habit. When I come back, I have disposable money to spend. I'm going to spend it on drugs. Like I didn't come back and kick a habit. I came back with a habit. I'm just
because I mean, Ken, they go through it in the Ken Burns documentary. But the levels of drug use mm-hmm. in the army when they were in Vietnam was like, I don't remember what term they used, like epidemic or dangerous proportions. Like the government was writing these reports mm-hmm. about it because they're like, this is seriously detrimental to the war effort. And it was like heroin, it was marijuana, it was all of these things that was like basically compromising the fighting ability of the force.
Yeah. Yes, this movie kind of touched on some of that, which I thought was fascinating because it's, you know, if you get a chance, watch Ken Burns documentary, watch Kill the Messenger. I forgot what it was called, the Dark Territory, something he called his, but you can find it online. You can read what he wrote, and it's fascinating and terrifying at the same time because you realize this actually happened.
And then also don't be too naive to think that something of that nature isn't happening right now.
Yeah. It makes sense.
This stuff still needs to be funded. Our drug problem has not been solved.
There was a clip when we first went to Afghanistan and they were protecting opium fields. Mm-hmm. It was like on CNN. I was like, why? I was like, they're really protecting opium fields. They're out there. This is a...
Well, and something happened with their regular crops and so they moved over to even more opium production because it's a cash crop.
Yeah. Is it used for anything other than opioids?
No, I don't think so.
Huh. I mean, I guess it's opioids or
pharmaceutical people use it. Yeah.
Interesting. Okay, so back to Lethal Weapon. Interesting things. This was Hendon's first time watching it, which is really, I enjoy watching him watch it for the first time. And he really liked it. Am I right with that?
Oh, yeah. It might be in my top 10 movies. I have to watch it again to make sure, but it was a lot of fun.
So great. Usually, yeah. So why don't we start with you, Kendon? What was your favorite thing about this movie?
I really liked both of the characters. I'll have to open up my notes because I have more than one. But I'll start with, I really liked both of the characters and that... So I'm going to go a little bit into, I started watching Lethal Weapon 2, and I feel like it kind of lost some of what I really like about this.
I'm rolling my eyes because I was like, focus on Lethal Weapon.
Yeah, but I mean...
Focus. What did you like about Lethal Weapon? So
my point is in contrast to other buddy cop movies, sort of, I bought these two characters. I feel like they weren't overdone, and made their interactions seem more natural to me. And that was probably my favorite thing about the movie, but the entire plot was interesting. You see, we've taken this whole long diversion into, you know, the military and drugs and trafficking. It was a good topic to write this sort of movie around. And it was a plot that wasn't overly It didn't stretch, what do you call it? Suspension of belief too much. It was just an interesting plot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's not overly stuffed with a bunch of other stuff.
No, the action is exciting without getting over the top.
Right.
Like, it's interesting that a lot of, like, there are a ton of over-the-top action movies in the 80s.
Yes.
Let's say that.
That is the 1980s.
But it seems like we've been needing to try to top that sort of action for the last 30 years. And sometimes when you scale back the action to a more human level, it kind of gets more exciting.
Yeah.
Right, like that end fight scene. I enjoyed watching that.
And also, much different than our heroes in the 80s. Like, these guys are in real danger. Like, they get beat up. Like, things don't necessarily go right away. I was just talking about Cobra. Nothing really happens to Stallone in Cobra. Like, these guys get punched, they get shot at, they get stabbed. They go to
his house.
Yeah, they go to his house, they take his daughter. Like, it's a lot of bad stuff happens to these guys. And that's, it feels more grounded than some of these other.
Well, I mean, think about it. Like, if you see a car explode, that would be a big deal. Like, an explosion is a big deal. Like, when we watch movies now, it's got to be a building or a plane or whatever. But in real life, like a car, or like a car exploding and some gunfire is a real big deal.
Yeah. Okay. So I had a. It was difficult for me to understand in the end. So they send people. They have the family leave Murtaugh's house because they know Mr. Joshua is going to go there.
Josh.
And he goes inside, and the. They say, like, dear bad guys, no one's home.
I like that. Whatever. I like seeing that note.
Yeah, but I did not understand the two police officers that he, shot in the head, like, on his way in. Why did they sign up for that role? Like, we're going to protect Murtaugh's house by being the bait? Did they say goodbye to their kids?
And yeah. No, they were there to protect him.
Yeah.
But it was trying to show how much of a badass Busey is.
I guess maybe they were not bait.
I mean, I think they knew.
If they pulled the police, it's not quite bait, but if they pulled the police guard off, then he would have been suspicious that suspected that they weren't there.
It just seemed like for those two, I don't know why they would agree to be that.
It's a lose-lose. They're just doing their job.
Yeah.
Gary Busey and those chompers are just too much for anyone.
They're definitely outmatched. Yes. Like, and that's one thing I liked about, they're going up against people with, like, major military hardware and training.
Shadow forces.
Yeah.
Speaking of chompers, we're never going to be able to do it, but Starship Troopers. Gary Busey's son.
Jake Busey.
Also he's has got big
twice
chompers?
The size of.
He's got I twice think he might the chompers. Have bigger chompers. Yeah, his head is just.
He's also in Contact.
He's that weird dude.
Yeah, he plays like the religious guy.
Yeah, who shows up.
Yeah,
and destroys.
Oh
the machine
yeah, I know that guy.
Before they get another machine just like it.
Yeah, he has big teeth too.
He's in that one movie with Michael J. Fox, and he's the ghost. What is that movie called? Dang, I had it and I lost it.
Where they're coming out the walls?
Frighteners, there it is.
Oh.
It's the guy who did Lord of the Rings.
I didn't remember that was.
Oh,
Peter Jackson.
Peter Jackson.
Right. Speaking from of
New
Zealand.
Which, from New
we Zealand. We just visited New Zealand and we went to Hobbit Town.
Oh,
yeah.
Rub it in.
And we look, we carried our signs around looking for Taika.
Did you go to any of the Hobbit stuff?
Yeah.
No, we went there.
We went in, we had cider.
Did you go to Bilbo's
where,
house?
Yeah. Yes.
You Kenan, can go inside of... Yeah.
Kenan was dressed as Saruman, and Shalia was Sauron.
Yeah.
You guys had a little fight.
We wore our rings.
They were the menace of Hobbit Town.
Basically.
It was awesome.
Well, it was the racing of the Shire.
Just a big eye walking around.
Where they meet.
But you know, like my wedding ring has the it is the one ring. It's got the Elvish script on it. So by Bilbo's house, by the set for Bilbo's house... They have his clothes hung up, including what he was wearing where he had the ring in his pocket. So I have a picture of that. I'll put that up on our Instagram.
At ubernerd.com.
Yeah.
Hey, I'm proud of it.
Yeah. He also has multiple wedding rings because we assume that he'll lose some. So I got to wear one of those too.
How far was Hobbit Town from where you were at?
Not as far as some of the other things.
It's like an hour or something.
I'm really bad at staying awake in the car, so I
terrible
really fall asleep pretty quick.
She was out.
So I didn't really know what's
knocked out. It is in the middle of the day.
You just driving by yourself?
Oh, no, we were in a family. We had a whole bunch of people.
Well, we went to Rotorua, so it's not like we were staying close to Hobbitown, but...
Close enough. It was driving distance.
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah.
I need to go.
Definitely. Which is, okay, so since we're on the tangent, the interesting thing about Hobbiton is that all these different hobbit holes are all different sizes, right? Because the scales are different based on, because they're doing tricks with the camera, right? So some of them you can walk into, like as a full grown, you know, I'm like 6 foot, you can walk into them, and then some of them are like knee high. Just so that they can get the different shots, but they composite them all such that they all seem like they're the same size.
Wow.
Movie magic.
Yeah, it's movie magic.
Mm. Oh, also, none of them go deeper than like 5 or 6 feet.
Great. Wow. Just ruined Lord of the Rings for me. I thought it was all real.
I'm with you, Josh. I thought it was real.
Shut the front door.
I need more Dickle.
Did you ride a giant eagle while you were there?
The eagles!
No,
it rained on us, though.
Oh, snaps.
It's eagle piss.
Okay, Josh, what's your favorite thing about Lethal Weapon?
I like the characters. I like Riggs and Murtaugh and just their dynamic and inappropriate.
Does somebody say that?
No, that was the Dickle speaking.
Okay.
So just stay on track.
So whenever we're following drinking, along. Whenever we're taking a swig of Dickle, we'll have to...
Yeehaw. Yeah, Josh and I are partaking in what you call podcast fuel.
Yes, George Dickel Rye. Get it at Safeway for $19.99.
And a cube of ice.
Maybe two.
Full free.
Maybe two.
If you're Josh, like a whole tray of ice.
And then a dash of water.
And a dab of ranch.
A sprinkle of salt. But no, just the dynamic between the characters and... because they're so opposite of each other, but they play so well together.
Yeah.
And so... And the action. The action's pretty good.
But at the end, they become family.
They become family. That's right.
And I appreciate that.
Yeah, for sure.
So, Kenan didn't like Lethal Weapon 2. We didn't finish it. But one of the fun things was watching it. And, like, so Lethal Weapon, they are introduced. In Lethal Weapon 2, you see, like, he does the cooking at Murtaugh's house now.
Yeah.
Murtaugh's wife does all of his laundry. Like... he is part of the family.
Well, it's funny, the joke with the first one is Murtaugh's wife is a horrible cook.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so Riggs is always giving him crap about that.
Yeah, so he's like, by this time he has a second one, he's like,
I'll have to watch that one.
Do my own cooking now.
That was also made in the 80s, correct? Mm-hmm. 89, I believe.
Yeah, it's definitely one we can touch on.
I think we should definitely do it. And when I say I don't like it, it was just... not a good idea for me to watch it right after watching something that I thought was so amazing for the reasons that I like Lethal Weapon 1. Lethal Weapon 2 was to me a major departure.
What's even the plot? I don't even remember the plot of 2.
Well, it's the introduction of Joe Pesci.
Yeah, they gotta protect him.
And it's the South Africans with the diplomatic immunity.
Yeah, that's what it is. They go also, that house is like being built, and there's that big action.
Don't spoil it. Kenan hasn't seen it yet.
Right. Have you seen the toilet scene though?
Yeah, he hasn't seen it. He hasn't seen any of it. That's what I'm saying.
Spoiler alert.
I was like, just watch the whole thing. Yeah.
I wasn't sure about that. I was like, this
thought it opened with that.
No, that's another one.
No.
How does it open?
They're driving a station wagon in Murtaugh's station wagon.
Yeah, and then he gets out of the car and he's like, "No, I'm driving." And is it
the house? Is it the chasing someone and like?
No, because they end up, the car chase ends up with him flipping. They flip the guy's car, and all that gold comes out the back.
Oh yeah, gold, South African coins, which I did love. Okay, we're talking about Lethal Weapon 2 later. There's lots to love about it.
There is, but in the way that, like, Rush Hour is fun.
I think you should.
Whoa.
It's just slow not down, it's talking not about Rush Hour. It's not grounded the way
that
this
not.
Movie is. So
and the Pesci character was clearly a departure into something different than what they do.
Yeah, they get more comedy. Well, you know, he's the comedian.
Chris Rock comes in.
Stop, yeah, that's stop, the third stop, one. Stop. That's the slow third down. One. So slow your
Rock,
roll.
You Chris shut Rock. Your mouth.
Slow your roll.
And Jet Li.
And Jet Li.
Yeah.
So, again, this is why I wanted you to catch up. Yeah. But so the only reason I brought it up was to say, Josh, yes, in terms of their relationship, it grows.
Yeah, it grows. At the very beginning, you know, Murtaugh and Riggs, they're partners, but no, you know, Murtaugh doesn't want Riggs. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if Riggs wants to be Murtaugh's partner, but
nah.
But they definitely don't like each other, and so you know, I don't know, buddy cop.
And also his daughter's in different places in each movie.
What?
Murtaugh's daughter.
Mm-hmm.
She's very prominent in every movie.
Yes.
Oh, really?
She is.
But stop, because Hendon hasn't watched it yet, and I want him to watch that.
She's doing a condom commercial on the next
one. Yes, that's the second one. That's a reoccurring theme.
So I'm not worried about the third one.
Yeah, okay.
That's the most withering stare.
Mm-hmm.
I'm mad at you right now. Yeah.
Okay. How dare you?
Tim, what's your favorite thing about Lethal Weapon?
I think I'm with them. Like, the two of those guys, they were really, really good together. Like, really good chemistry. They bounced well off each other. The jokes went well. The action went well. It's an easy movie to track. It's kind of straightforward. Action.
It is straightforward, you know?
Pretty straightforward. There's not a lot of twists and turns, but it's done very well. And you feel like these guys are in danger. You know, I've seen it before, and I was like, man, how did they get out of this again? I, like, forgot. So, there's still a bit of that thrill that's in it that's missing from some of the 80s movies where it's just a bunch of explosions and macho man stuff. Like, you get to see these men be vulnerable. Like, and most of our action stars in the 80s weren't really allowed to be that vulnerable. So, yeah.
It seems like there's a lot of police misconduct that doesn't come off super, like, negative.
Oh, yeah.
But, like, I was just wondering, like, when they go to the part with the pool, with the guy who drowns in the pool... He just straight up, like, handcuffs those two women to a pole.
Around a tree.
Yeah. For doing what, again?
Trying to run away. They're doing drugs.
He tells them to go. When they first meet them, they tell them to go to the room. And then when they see them, when the guy sees them, then they try to run. And then he handcuffs them to the tree.
Okay.
So initially doesn't just handcuff.
But it's just funny. His whole thing is, shoot him in the leg. Don't, like we'll be friends if you don't kill somebody today.
Right. Yeah.
I don't know. Those, the you definitely like the cops in the. I did.
Yeah.
Definitely. But there's that part where they're going over to. They're looking for. They're at the one woman's house, the prostitute's house, and it was just
with the kids. Short
part with the kids.
Yeah.
And the kid's like, my mom says the police shoot black people.
Yeah.
And there's Murtaugh and there's another black officer.
Yeah.
And they're like, have nothing to say. Like, it's a real awkward moment.
Yeah.
It's like, what?
I forgot about that scene. That's really crazy.
Yeah, what do you say there?
Yeah. I guess I'm with you guys in terms of favorites. I was, like, that scene with the kids is one of my favorite parts of, like, them questioning them and, like, what did he look like? Like, me? Like, him? Oh, he had a tattoo? Like, that was good. But ultimately, I think just, yeah, the way it flows and the way they work together and they, like, they don't bitch about it. They're like, hey, we're going to be partnered up. Let's go. And just move on. Let's go to the plot of the movie. So.
They locked up with two great actors.
Yeah.
Yes. Agreed. Yes, they did. So something I thought was very interesting, too, that I don't think we've really touched on yet is, like, mental health. And the way I think mental health, mental illness and, like, treatment and all of that depression. Has changed in the last 30 years. Because, like, you've got... Okay, so you've got Mel Gibson's character, whose wife has died, and he's psychotic, he's suicidal, and everyone, like, no one's listening to this psychiatrist or the mental health person who's saying, like, he should not be on duty, he needs to not be working, and it's just nobody's taking any of it seriously. Like, they know there's, like, you can get that psych pension money, like, so it exists, but, like, he's not in counseling. He's not, like, it's just really interesting the way, where it was then.
Having never seen this movie, I had always heard it described as, you know, he's the crazy partner, you know, and Danny Glover's, like, the more stable or whatever you want to call it. But when I saw it, it wasn't just, like, he's not, like, the crazy wild one, like, I don't know, Chris Tucker. Like, they call him crazy, but you're right. It's a mental illness thing. Mm-hmm. He's depressed slash suicidal. Yeah. And kind of unstable, he's not just crazy.
Like a loose cannon.
He's not a loose cannon, exactly. Yeah. He's somebody who's dealing, like, his wife died recently in a car accident.
Yeah, right? It was months.
Yeah.
A couple months, I think, before the start of the movie.
So it's not, I don't, it's weird that I always thought of it, it's like, oh, it's part of his personality. It's like, oh, these opposites being put together. Yeah. But it's not. It's somebody who's going through a very, like, traumatic or danger, or not, traumatic part of his life. And another guy who's got a really, I really like seeing that he has a nice family life. Even though his wife is, you know, doesn't cook that well, but she's well adjusted. They have a nice, relationship. And I want to say, like, I think it's important as far as, like the portrayal of the movie and as far as it being, like, influential, that they're a nice middle class stable black family. Mm-hmm. And it's the sort of thing that I recognize. That doesn't, like, that isn't in a lot of the media that we see, but, like, that's, like, I grew up in a nice middle class neighborhood with, like, two stable parents, and
he's got his boat.
He's got his boat and all this other stuff. And that's what that's the contrast between, like, one of them has a stable life, the other one doesn't. So it didn't turn out to be what the description of the movie was to me. And I actually kind of feel like that description is kind of inaccurate.
It's dismissive.
Yeah, it's dismissive.
But it also wants you to start there, because I think when you're introduced, you're supposed to think one thing about it, and then you get to see the characters, and then there's more there. So I think the description is, like, definitely very surface level, and then you scratch just a little bit and realize it's much deeper than that, maybe?
Well, yeah, and it's, I think that's what makes the growth of their relationship satisfying, because he goes from, like you said, he starts off in that, just smoking or whatever, in his trailer on the side of the beach to being taken into, like, a stable family, something he wasn't able to have because he lost his wife.
Yeah. So influence. So anyway, yeah, very interesting. So Ken, you were talking about influences. Tim, do you think this movie was influential?
Oh, 100%. Yeah.
How so?
I think a lot of other 80s movies try to copy the buddy cop formula that blueprint that Lethal Weapon had. Like you talked about Rush Hour, right? Mm-hmm. Two cops from different walks of life who have to come together to solve some crime, and then they end up becoming friends at the end and becoming like family. That's Fast and Furious.
You know family. What I mean? It's all about the family.
Yeah. Uh-oh. I think we should try to tie everything to the Fast and the Furious.
You can.
It already is.
Because I think, I mean, it doesn't hurt that there's 8 Fast and the Furious movies. Yeah.
But you know what I mean? Like that model and that sort of formula, I think other movies have tried to do it because it works so well with Lethal Weapon.
But you have to have the right chemistry for it to be believable.
Right.
And these two actors have it.
Yelling at each other? I mean, because that's what they do, is just, like, yell at each other a lot and then invite each other over for dinner.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So, works. Like we said, family.
Family.
It works. Add a few Coronas into that, bam.
All Josh ever does is yell at me.
That's right. I don't really, though.
No, not so much.
Josh, what do you think is influential, if
anything? I would agree with Tim. You know, it's kind of like the buddy cop starter track.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of movies in the 80s. Yeah, I think it was like Tango and Cash was the one that tried to do it.
I love Tango and Cash.
I think it bombed at the at everything.
Did it? You know,
critically, just reviled. And reviled, is that a word?
It is now.
Reviled.
We know what it meant.
It's totally a word. Reviews. Anyways.
They didn't like it.
They didn't like it. No one liked it. But,
no, sir, I don't like it.
They didn't like it.
No, sir. But yeah, I think...
Wait, what year did this come out?
This is 87.
87.
Oh, Miami Vice would have come out before this too, right?
Yeah.
Miami Vice was would have been early mid 80s. That's definitely buddy cop.
Was like serious. Miami Vice was showing cocaine on television, like, in the 80s. No one was.
We're gonna need to do Miami Vice, but that's gonna take.
Oh gosh.
That's an assignment.
So this movie is a Richard Donner movie, and it came out after he had made The Goonies, which is about a bunch of kids who are a family.
Aww.
But also, I mean, Richard Donner is Superman.
Superman, yeah.
1 and 2.
Exactly. So.
So there's some movie-making connections. Yeah. Okay, so I think it's influential just because I remember it from growing up. Like, it's a far back memory, and it started a franchise. It's one of the franchises that I appreciate, that I enjoyed seeing the next one and the next one. And I probably saw it too young, but whatever. It was fun and I liked it. And yeah, I was really sad when Mel Gibson turned out to, like, yeah, like you said, Tim, be that character. I really like Riggs. I like Lethal Weapon. So yes, influential.
There's also a Lethal Weapon TV show on right now on Fox.
Yeah, have you seen it? Has anyone been watching it?
No, I haven't watched it at all. I saw like 5 minutes the other night. Oh. Well, it was all right.
So the reason why I had suggested this movie for this week is because I'm a fan of this podcast called Black Men Can't Jump in Hollywood. And they go through, like...
Shout out.
Movies with black leads in them. And they had a character or an actor from the TV show on to do this movie. And their description of the movie made me really want to watch the movie right away. So that's a connection to the TV show. So I want to give the TV show a try.
Good job, TV show. Way to bring back... Like, you are bringing us back to our roots... Right? So we were made in the 80s, but not everyone here had even seen Lethal Weapon. But now that there's a TV show, Lethal Weapon, people who Kenan listens to are talking about it. So Kenan now wants to watch Lethal Weapon.
I was the only one who hadn't seen it before.
Yeah, I
saw it a long time ago.
Yeah.
But yeah.
My dad was too busy watching basketball.
Oh, we watched a lot of basketball too.
No, my dad was just watching basketball constantly.
Okay.
Anything? We had one TV.
Anything else that we haven't touched on that you guys wanted to talk about for Lethal Weapon? All right, so Danny Glover is turning 50, right? This starts with his 50th birthday, and the actor's 42.
Yeah, they aged him up,
which is interesting.
He had quite the ab muscles in that movie.
I was not staring at his abs.
I wasn't either. It's on Wikipedia.
Oh, okay.
I'm pretty sure it's on Wikipedia.
The picture?
Yes.
So, his whole family just busts into the bathroom while he's in the bed.
Well, yeah. So I watched this with my wife, and that was one thing that we both realized or saw is like he's in the tub, and his family is like right there. On the edge of the tub, like, here you go, Dad. Here's your birthday cake, whatever. Like, they're obviously seeing his everything.
His nickel.
And his nickel, yeah. And his daughter is, it's almost creepy, the dynamic between him and his daughter. His daughter's the last one to, like, leave, and she's, like, right there with almost like her arm is in the tub kind of thing. Like, she's leaning on the edge of the tub, and she's like, oh, hey, Dad. Happy birthday. And she's, like, right there. I can see everything. I don't know. It's just creepy.
It's awkward.
Yes. It is awkward. It's like, what is going on?
And you know, it doesn't go too far, but the dynamic between her and Riggs can be kind of funny.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, it doesn't go too far, so that's why it's okay. But her just, like, giving him goo-goo eyes to the whole thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a little awkward.
So she had some interesting points. I remember, Kenan, when we were watching it. One was that we noticed Mr. Joshua had a thing for daughters? Or just, we were interesting because it was like the one guy's daughter's taken or killed, and then this daughter, and it's all about your daughters, and these guys having to protect their daughters and stuff. I don't know if we want to talk about that, but we can. And then the other one was that they're up in the boat drinking their beer.
Oh, yeah.
And you were really wanting to talk about that conversation.
Oh, yeah, the weed and the beer.
The marijuana conversation. So they're both police officers, right? One of which just came off of narcotics, right? And she wanted to go out, and he was like, don't you remember you're grounded? Murtaugh is saying this to her, and he's like, you know, she got caught smoking a joint in the house. But it's not like a super, like, 80s dare, say no to drugs thing. It's very casual. Probably because they were both in Vietnam, you would think, maybe.
Well, yeah, even back in the 80s, marijuana wasn't a big deal.
Yeah. She was, and she walks away muttering, like, you guys get to sit up there drinking your beer, and I smoke one little joint.
And what did he say? He said it's because beer is legal and marijuana is not legal.
Yep.
But it's like, even though it's not...
That's the difference.
Does one of the adults say, like, maybe it should be or something like... Yeah, like, probably. But it was interesting that it did not have, like, the super, like, hard conservative sort of opinion about drugs that I would have expected from those two characters being the time, the age, and the fact that they're both police officers.
Yeah, they were very chill and cool about it. Also, I was just like, wait, not just like she's grounded because she was caught smoking pot, but she was smoking it in the house.
Yeah.
I was like, so if she was just outside, would she have been grounded? Was that, or was maybe that okay? Maybe she would have been
caught.
Yeah.
It's quite the smelly.
Maybe she's just mad she was dumb.
Right?
Yeah, right?
It's real hard to get caught, like to get away with smoking weed in the house. Yeah. Right?
But it has a distinct smell.
Yeah. It stinks.
Yeah, it has the most distinct smell out there.
So, that was interesting. Anything else? Any other lethal weapon? I did like, you know, we talked about Commando and other movies that we've seen, and like, what does the title mean? This one, we don't even mean, like, the title is Mel Gibson. Riggs is Lethal Weapon. I like it.
And they get it out of the way early.
Yeah. You know exactly where we are.
I'm not going to have to register you as a lethal weapon.
Yeah.
So one thing I'll say is the going to the desert scene.
Mm-hmm.
They have Murtaugh surrounded, and Murtaugh pulls out a grenade, and everyone's freaking out. Yeah. He's got a grenade!
Yeah.
And Murtaugh's like, yeah, well, I'm going to take you all down with me kind of thing with his one grenade. He's like, how the hell is one little grenade? This is back in the 80s where a grenade makes a gigantic explosion.
Yeah.
But in reality, I don't think it makes that big of an explosion.
So no,
it's real intense and like a very localized. It's
more of a shrapnel kind of thing, isn't it?
Well, if he threw it at them.
Well, yeah.
But he was talking about taking us all out.
Yeah. Right.
What's like, the radius on it?
Probably 10 feet.
Yeah.
So just run. They'd be fine. Yeah.
No. Because how long does it take to go off? Because he'd already pulled the pin. I don't know how.
Well, that's another thing. They have, like, what, 10 guys with automatic weapons trained on them.
But he could destroy the car, first of all.
So but that's not what he was saying that he was doing.
No, but destroying the car would cause a lot of damage, and then probably also the shrapnel and all of that. I don't know.
But you're his plan wasn't solid.
It turns out that the smoke grenade is more dangerous, ended up being more dangerous than the maybe a real grenade.
The killing radius of a grenade is 5 meters.
Oh, that's a lot.
No, it's 15 feet.
Well, I think they were that close.
I don't know.
There was a lot of guys.
Okay.
Some of them were on the other side of that car.
Yeah, exactly. I think there was like two guys that might have been in the blast radius.
So this... Well, but he would have just run towards them, right? He's going to, like...
Yeah, by then he would have been distance. Just destroyed,
All right, so this has been a question I've had for the last couple weeks, ever since the, like, false missile warning in Hawaii. What is the killing radius of a missile? Because...
One that has a nuclear warhead on it?
Depends. Oh, is it a nuclear missile?
Well, I think
that would have been the assumption.
The idea is that North Korea is locked a load of nukes.
Yeah.
A cruise missile would, I mean, it would mess up a couple buildings.
But if it was a cruise missile, unless it was an accidental launch, you expect cruise missiles to start coming in groups. So either it's a nuclear-tipped missile, or it's a bunch of cruise missiles.
There's a fancy app on, or not an app, there's a picture. Of the blast radius of a nuke if North Korea nuked Seattle.
Yeah.
And it, like, say the epicenter is Pike Place.
Okay.
The extent of the damage would be all the way to Lake Union. Basically affected by...
That's all.
So that's what I...
Oh, that's just the blast.
That's
the blast and the radiation
zone. But the heat wave...
I mean, the percussion of it would go, the concussive force would probably be felt.
Man, okay, so...
I just, okay, so my the reason quick, for my quick, question... Quick.
Shout out to one of the greatest podcasts on, in fact, it was like iTunes top podcast rated. It's called Hardcore History, and he's got a...
Dan Carlin.
Dan Carlin's Hardcore History, and he's got a whole one, and I think it is... The Destroyer of Worlds episode, which is all about nuclear annihilation, and they talk about all of the things that all of the aspects of when just the atom bomb was dropped on Nagasaki, on Hiroshima and Nagasaki, and they talk about they got the shock wave, the heat wave, the fire, all of that stuff, and then think about the fact that those that those devices are used now as the what do you call it? The fuse or the primer for a thermonuclear weapon. Like, those just set off thermonuclear weapons. So, like, it would probably be destruction all the way down to Tacoma. I would, or devastation maybe, all the way down to Tacoma.
Sorry. On that note.
Well, that's great. I guess my question, because we were talking about the grenade and the radius, and I was just wondering, because I think people think that Hawaii is just, like, this small little place, but there's lots of islands, and just because one was going to get hit doesn't mean all of them were going to get hit, is what I was thinking about.
They would all be in trouble. Everybody.
They'd all be fucked.
Everyone.
Yeah. Well, also, I didn't know it was a nuclear missile. I thought it was like a...
Like a ping pong ball?
Like a missile with the... I don't know what I thought.
Like a regular, like, warhead on it. It's not nuclear.
Yeah.
Yeah, no.
I guess...
Thank God it didn't happen.
Yeah. Now I'm like a little bit more upset.
Wait, that's when people were calling their families like they're... Like, this might be the last 5 minutes of my life.
I don't like it. I don't like it.
You don't like... You don't like nuclear holocaust?
It's produced a lot of good video games. Fallout. Yeah.
Fallout. Shelter.
Shelter.
Oh, I hate, like, the post-apocalyptic world.
Yeah.
Like, The Road.
Let Me Die.
The Road. Oh, God bless America.
I couldn't make it through that movie.
That Book is of such Eli. A hard...
Book of Eli.
Book of Eli.
Waterworld.
No, that wasn't nuclear. That was just people being...
This is a bad Postman. Movie.
We just watched that the other day.
Really? Was Postman nuclear?
Yeah. Oh, I don't know.
It was a disaster.
It was another disaster.
Disaster. It's a disaster. No,
the movie wasn't a disaster.
Aww. It was after a Roland Emmerich movie.
Okay. Do we have anything else to talk about from Lethal Weapon?
No, I think that's it.
It's a great movie.
The movie, go see it.
It's a fun movie.
The sequel's good. The threequel is...
Yeah.
It's all right.
It's all right.
It's enjoyable.
I love the third one.
Okay. We'll talk about it later.
Yeah.
We'll talk about it once Ken has seen it.
1998, I'm going to guess.
3, 2, 4, 4.
What are you doing, Kenan?
We're looking at pornography.
Come on. Sex let's bots. Focus here. Wrap it up.
Sex bots.
Sexbots.com. No. No.
Yeah, it's good.
I don't think we got anything else.
And that's it. Thanks for listening. All right.
Look us up on the show notes for something.
Check show notes for our email.
Leave us a... Give us a rating, please. Bye.
Okay. Bye.